Okay, so we have a little bit of an idea as to what Plato is talking about with his virtue ethics. And then we've got a little bit of complaint about that from the likes of the Parmenides that we talked about. But that argument really is very similar to one that Plato's own student Aristotle put forth in his own work. Now, as you probably know, Aristotle was a student of Plato, and he was very, very influenced by his teacher, Plato. However, he also broke free from his teacher's teachings in lots and lots and lots and lots of ways. He agreed with Plato on a couple of things, but he really did disagree with Plato on all kinds of things. And specifically, of course, we're going to look today at his views about ethics. Now, of course, we see that Aristotle does disagree with Plato's notion of the forms. And what that means, of course, is that we have to re-understand the nature of ethics. Because if you recall, for Plato, there's virtue, which is something that he tries to pretty hard to understand. But remember that the basic motivation for doing what he does, the basic motivation for being virtuous, in other words, if you were to ask Plato the question, why should we be moral? Why should we care about any of this ethics stuff? Plato's answer is going to have to be something like, well, because look, being moral, being virtuous, being ethical provides us with really the only shot we have of understanding the good, right? I mean, that's really our motivation. Because if you are virtuous, then you can get this, perhaps, hopefully, get this understanding of the form of the good, and then we can understand the good, and wouldn't that be wonderful? But of course, Aristotle comes along and argues via the third man argument and other things, that there's no such thing as the forms. Those metaphysical forms, things in that abstract, non-physical realm, those things just don't exist. There's just no such thing as those forms. Well, of course, if that's the case, if Aristotle is right, and let's just for the sake of argument here suggest that or assume that he is, if that's the case and there aren't any forms, then that means we have to re-understand the nature of virtue and morality, because if the forms, or at least understanding the forms, was our original motivation to be moral, then and those that motivation is gone, it's not an actual existing thing, well then the entire reason for being moral can't be that, right? So what is it instead? So, okay, what Aristotle does is he undertakes an investigation of virtue from a different perspective. So he gives us this book, The Nicomachean Ethics, and we're only going to look at a little bit of this, but I want you to read these sections as I go through them, or as we refer to them, and as before, you know, audio, so pause and read the section and think about the question that I ask and so on, and then move on. So remember, this is important for Aristotle, because even if we assume that Aristotle's right, that the third man argument adequately shows that the forms don't exist, that there's no such thing as the forms, that's only the first step. I mean, it's only one thing to show that your opponent's argument is bad. There's the completely separate step where you have to actually show what to put in its place, right? It's only the first step to prove that your opponent's argument is a bad argument. That doesn't actually prove that your opponent's conclusion is false. All it does is say their argument hasn't established their conclusion. What you still have to do is provide your own argument for why your position is good. So, at the beginning of this section here, the beginning of this reading, Aristotle is talking about inquiry. He's talking about the good, and he's talking about ends. So this section one, book one, section one, take a read of that section and section two really as well. And before you continue in the audio, think about what exactly Aristotle is talking about here. He talks about shipbuilding, he talks about horses, he talks about ends, and talks about things for their own sake. So just think about that for a minute or two after you read the first couple of sections, and then restart the audio. Okay, so hopefully you've gone through this reading of the first two sections, and you've got this understanding that Aristotle is concerned with goals, and he's concerned with the ends that are pursued for various reasons. These goals or ends that are pursued for various reasons. So when we're thinking of what we're aiming for, that's what he means when he's talking about ends. We're talking about what we're aiming for, what our end game is, what our goals are. And he gives these examples, right? We've got these different goals or these different ends in mind for these different sciences. Medicine, the goal is health. Shipbuilding, the goal is a vessel. Strategy, the goal is victory. Economics, the goal is wealth. Now, he also talks about how these things are sometimes nested. They're subordinate, right? So, we do something for the sake of something else, right? We have these things that are subordinate. You have a particular goal, and that goal is a goal that you have not for its own sake, but for the sake of something else, right? So, for example, you have the goal of listening to this and doing the work that the course requires. You're aiming to achieve some goal, right? That goal is probably something like getting a good grade in the class. Sure, fair enough. But that goal of getting a good grade in the class is, I hope, not your ultimate life's pursuit, right? I mean, that would be pretty sad if that were your ultimate life goal, was to get a good grade in this class. No, it's not like you complete the class, you get your A or whatever it is, and then you think to yourself, okay, my life is now complete. I'm done. I don't need to do anything else. My life is complete. Well, probably not, right? Again, that would be pretty sad if getting a good grade in an introductory class as an undergraduate at a university is your ultimate life's ambition. No, you want a good grade in the class because achieving that goal isn't what you wanted for its own sake. Achieving that goal is what you wanted to do, or a stepping stone you wanted to achieve in order to further yourself on the way to some other goal, right? It is a subordinate goal. Something like, it helps you along the way of achieving the larger goal of getting your degree or something like that. But then, of course, ask yourself, is that your ultimate life's goal, getting a degree? Well, again, I hope not. I hope you're not going to walk across the stage and get your diploma, and then you're just going to be like, okay, complete, done. I can just go sit in my mom's basement and eat Cheetos for the rest of my life. No, that's probably not what's going on. You want the degree because it's going to help you achieve some yet further goal. So he's talking here about these nested or subordinate goals that we have. So think about what he might be getting at. You know, if you're doing this, if you're thinking about, well, what's my goal here? And what's that goal aimed towards? Is there some further goal? Well, what's the further goal? What's the further goal from that? What's the further goal from that? Can you think of the ending point? Can you get to the end point where you recognize, perhaps, that this is the ultimate ending point? What is the thing that everything is striving for? And you're looking for this ultimate goal, not as a stepping stone to something further, but you're trying to achieve this goal for its own sake, whereas all the other stepping stones are ultimately leading towards this thing. What do you think this thing might be? Because Aristotle says here, there are things that we do and desire for its own sake. Everything else is desired for the sake of this thing. What could that thing be? What sort of science, what sort of inquiry actually has this as its question? I mean, you know, the name of the game in medicine is understanding health. The name of the game in shipbuilding is building vessels. The name of the game in economics is achieving wealth. These are examples he's already given. Okay, well, the goal of those things has already been established. But again, a vessel or victory or wealth, these other things are not, they don't seem like they qualify for this ultimate for its own sake goal. So what would be the sort of science or pursuit, you know, like medicine or shipbuilding or strategy or economics, what would be the science whose goal is this ultimate goal? Well, it's right here in section 2. Some of you may laugh at this, but he says, politics appears to be of this nature. Now, you might laugh at this because politics these days is, well, I mean, frankly, it's kind of a swear word. You know, I mean, the last several decades, we've got increasing distrust of politics. You know, politicians are pretty much seen to be untruthful and selfish and all sorts of things, that politics has now become this kind of like, you know, terrible, vile thing to many people, in the minds of many people. But set that aside for a second and recognize what politics is really, really supposed to be about. What is the pursuit of politics actually supposed to be doing? Well, as Aristotle sees it, this is the thing that ordains which of the sciences should be studied in a state, which each class of citizens should learn, and up to what point they should learn them. And we see even the most highly esteemed of capacities fall under this. Everything else seems to fall under politics. So, it legislates what we are to do, what we are to abstain from. The end of this science must include those of the others, so that the end of this science must be the good. Okay, so if the end of politics, the goal of politics, is the good, just like the goal or the end of medicine is health and economics is wealth and so on, well, then that seems like politics is, as he says, the highest art. It is the most important and the highest art. Okay, well, if politics is what we need to think about, if politics is what we need to aim at as far as our inquiry, well, then we ought to start by trying to think about what sort of path we might follow. In this next section, section 3, Aristotle goes in to talk about, you know, our goal here is clarity. Our goal is precision, but we have to make sure that we're just gonna make as much clarity and precision as we can. We have to try to understand the nature of our goal a little bit more. And now he says something that you might find quite interesting. This is the second paragraph of section 3. So take a second and read that and think about exactly what he's saying in this paragraph. You might find it interesting. Okay, so he says, we judge things well if we know them well, and of the things that we know well, we are a good judge. So, someone who has been educated in a subject is a good judge of that subject, and somebody who's received a good all-around education is a good judge in general. Now, then he comes to this conclusion. He says, a young man, now, of course, we'll ignore, I mean, he says man throughout, because, of course, at the time, women are not allowed to participate in such things. So, you know, that's an entirely separate discussion about the sort of inherent sexism that's going on here. But for our purposes, let's just kind of ignore that. And when we see him say man, let's just think, you know, person or human instead. Because there's no reason to think that it would apply only to men. Of course, Aristotle thought it would, but that's because he misunderstood the nature of human beings. So let's just kind of gloss over that and pretend every time he says man, he means, or we should read it as, person. But okay, so anyway, he says here, hence, a young man, a young person, is not a proper hearer of lectures on political science, for he's inexperienced in the actions that occur in life. But its discussions, politics discussions, start from these and are about these, and further, since he tends to follow his passions, his study will be vain and unprofitable, because the end aimed at is not knowledge, but action. Interesting claim here. Most of you are these young people about whom Aristotle is talking. You, he's saying, you young whippersnappers are not proper hearers of lectures on political science. Now, take a second to think about why he might be saying that. And be honest, with yourself at least, do you think he has a point? Because he's saying here, what's wrong with you young folks, right? That's kind of what he's getting at here, is what's wrong with you young folks is not that you're stupid. It's not that you're unintelligent. It's not that you're incapable of learning. You're just simply inexperienced in the actions that occur in life. Now, it's not your fault that that's the case, of course. You're just too young. It's not your fault that you're inexperienced in the actions that occur in life. That's okay. This is not a dig at the young. This is not some sort of claim here that the young are somehow defective. You're just not fully developed yet, he seems to be saying. Furthermore, he says, you young folks tend to follow your passions because your goal is action, not knowledge. That's really interesting too, I think, because what he's saying here is you don't have the proper understanding of what your goal should be. Now, just think about your own lives for a second to kind of relate to what Aristotle's talking about here. Think about how you approach your own lives. Even think back, for those of you who are, you know, standard college age, early 20s, late teens, something like that. Think back even just a few years ago. Think back to maybe middle school time or early high school time or something like that. Or even think back to when you were a much smaller child, although that probably will be harder. Maybe think about some child that you know, maybe a member of your family, something like that, cousin, nephew, whatever it might be, who's actually quite young. Think about the kinds of things that you cared about, right? I mean, when you're in middle school or early high school or whatever, think about the things that seemed to matter so much, and maybe in some ways still do. Oh, my friend, I posted this thing on Facebook 2 hours ago, and my friend still hasn't liked it. Or, you know, how many views you got on your Instagram post, or whatever the hell you kids are doing these days, right? Well, think about the things that mattered, and these things mattered so much to you, right? Or some offhand comment that one of your friends made, and this was so scandalous, and it just was such a big, I can't believe he said that. I mean, it's these sorts of things that you just cared so much about. And I'd be willing to bet that a lot of those things now, even now, when you're still really quite young, you probably look back on them and you think to yourself, geez, why did that matter so much to me? It doesn't matter at all. You know, and that's why I said think about some of these, maybe some young kids that you know. I have I have a young nephew, and you know, he's a child, young elementary, early elementary school age, and there are certain things that he just can't not think about, and that just matter so much. His parents made the mistake of showing him how to start the car with the push button start. And oh my goodness, if you deny him the opportunity to push that start button, it is the end of the world. Complete and total meltdown. Nothing is more important in the entire universe to him at that moment than that he gets to press that start button for the car. Now, of course, you look at that and think, what is the frickin' big deal? It doesn't matter at all if you get to push the button, right? But again, that's kind of what Aristotle is getting at here. The things that you care about, the things that you are so consumed with, are passions. You haven't learned to kind of calm down yet. You haven't learned to chill a little bit yet, to think things through, to think about the long-term consequences, and so on. You just are incapable of that. And from a scientific, biological perspective, Aristotle doesn't seem to be far wrong about this. There was a study not too long ago that was done, and of course this is one in a long series of studies that have been showing basically the same thing over the past several years, that concluded that your brain doesn't actually finish its development, specifically the parts of the brain that are generally considered to be responsible for thinking about consequences and understanding the consequences of things. That part of your brain doesn't finish its development until your late 20s. In fact, females, women finish their development earlier. I think for the women it was like 27 average, and for the men it was like 29 or something like that. But still, late 20s, right? I mean, late 20s. That means if you're 20, 19, thereabouts, you've got 10 more years. You're going to be long out of college, hopefully, and in your career before you have that completed development. That's a little shocking, right? So what Aristotle is saying here is, I don't know, it's interesting. I'm not going to say I completely agree with him here, but what he's saying here is not complete garbage, it seems. I mean, you know, look, he's saying not that you shouldn't have an education. He's not saying that you shouldn't learn anything. He's not saying that you shouldn't participate in, you know, all sorts of different academic activities. He's simply saying politics is something that you're simply too young for. And note, this is an important addendum to this. He says, it makes no difference whether you're young in years or youthful in character. The defect is not time. It does not depend on time. It's not number, although that does have something to do with it. But it depends on your living and pursuing each successive object as passion directs. For to such persons as to the incontinent, knowledge brings no profit, but to those who desire and act in accordance with a rational principle, knowledge about such matters will be of great benefit. So look, this is an interesting claim, and it's sort of setting up what's going to go on from the rest of here. This is a digression, and he's going to get back to talking about or trying to figure out, you know, what we're aiming at, what are the goods we're going for, and so on and so on. But at this point, this is, I think, sort of enough to chew on for a while. He's talking about goals. He's talking about a recognition that some goals are subordinate, that we do some things for the sake of some further thing. And what we should try to do is figure out what the ultimate overall end point, end game is, and
to do that, we should maybe recognize that the politics, as he's considering, is the science, the art that is whose goal is that. And then he says this really interesting claim that I'm kind of curious to know what you guys think about, that you young people are not the proper hearers of lectures in political science. Why? Because you're just not experienced enough yet. Oh, so interesting claim. So that's enough to chew on, I think, for now. And so we've gone through sections 1, 2, and 3 of the Nicomachean Ethics reading. And we'll pick up more when he gets back to trying to figure out what this ultimate goal is. And in section 4, he, right at the beginning, gives us this general agreement that everyone seems to agree on what it is. But then, of course, we have problems understanding what it is. So go through and read the next few sections. We'll pick up with section 4.